You know, they say that tabletop games can be therapeutic. So, no.
Welcome to Backyard Bards. is this the cold open, Austin?
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel comfortable including such personal anecdotes in this.
Yeah, no, that's I would appreciate you not for sure.
Well, there's my levity at work.
Previously on Gifted.
Yeah, I really feel like he's Scar from The Lion King right now.
When I went through the portal with my dad, I said, "Trust me, remember?"
Not choking him, but by his chin, hold him up against a tree.
Harvey, take a breather. Clearly, it's fine.
It sounds like you let him off easy.
It's a mixed bag of emotions. So Harvey's just kind of at base Harvey level. It's just him, no superpowers. Hits you once in the eye. What the fuck are you doing here, man?
I went with them just to get them off your backs, and then I put a tracker in their lair and got back to you guys as soon as possible.
I don't really hear a lot of remorse. I didn't hear him say I'm sorry or anything like that.
I vote we all just have some nugs and talk calmly, and then we go back to the lair and I can show you the tracker.
And it shows that it is out near San Francisco.
I suppose that would be a good place for villains to hide out.
We have to break into a lair that only had like 6 villains.
We can't tell if you're being honest right now, man.
What if we use the cult and their money, influence, and power to get us to California?
They used to call me the Grifter. Welcome to Backyard Bards. I am your GM this evening, Austin. We're all here together again. Please, guys, introduce yourselves.
Hey, it's, Sorry, let me start over. I genuinely blanked on my name for a second there. Hey, it's Alex. I was like, do I start with Paul or do I start with my actual name? Hey, it's Alex. I usually play, or only play, Paul Morph. AKA Mimic.
Hi, it's Harvey Waits, AKA played by Colin McElroy. I thought we were doing our character names first.
And yeah, it's me, Drew. I'll be playing Max, also known as Siphon. I got it right. I don't know.
Austin, I've noticed that you didn't introduce every single character you voiced. We're going to need you to go down the list because we do it, so it's only fair.
It makes a lot of sense.
Are you our mamas and dads and grandpas and mamas and moms and dads?
Hey, I'm Dan, and I am the coolest stepdad in this game.
So Dan can eat a dick, dude.
Shout out to stepdads.
Shout out to stepdads. This episode brought to you by Stepdads of America.
They're not the what? How does it go? They're the dads that stepped up.
Oh,
So this is an anecdote that I did not share last time when we talked about stepdads.
You got a stepdad?
I do. I just like to let you guys talk, and so I didn't share. But basically, the first time that I ever really interacted with George outside of like the wedding and stuff, was we went to the store together and I get to the checkout line. He's like, "Hang on, I'll be right back." And he comes back with a pack of condoms and then swipes them. And I'm like, this is very cool. And on the way back, he's like, it's just, it's normal for people to have sex. It's not a big deal. I'm like,
wait, to be totally clear, agree.
It's weird that you're telling me this. What?
Were they for you or for him, to be
for
clear?
Him. For him.
Oh, that's so fucking weird. He couldn't have waited or like,
come back to the store he later.
He could have dropped you off and then been like, oh, I forgot something. Or like, put you, got you in the car and said, oh, I forgot to grab one thing. And then he comes back and you're like, what is it? He says, don't worry. Literally anything else other than like right in front of you. Because at first I thought he's like doing this like a, hey, stepson, stay protected.
Yeah, and he's like, I've had a vasectomy, but it sometimes it doesn't work for the first little bit, so I'm just being careful. And it's like, I don't need to know this. Like,
oh, all right, so got it. George is really cool.
He is the least cool person that I know. So people who know George, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Did I ever actually meet George?
I mean, probably. If you ever came to my house.
Hello to him.
Yeah, he opened the door for me a bunch whenever I knocked on
the door. He's the really short Greek fellow.
Hmm. You know what they say about the Greeks.
Please tell me.
Love using condoms. Gotta wrap it with the pita.
Wild.
Okay, is this an
the George story?
Do like cold open. Just our first memories of our stepdads? Is that what this is?
No, I just, since we mentioned stepdads, I was like, I should share this story. I think they get a kick out of it.
It's a great story.
It's a good one. It's a good one. I love George. Send George my best. There's a Eric kiss.
Yeah,
this is an audio medium.
Just blew a kiss to my stepdad George,
who I've never met.
Do they have to be married to become stepdad?
Yeah,
like that's what turns it into. So before that, it's just your mom's boyfriend or whatever.
That's correct.
Just your mom.
Before that, it's just George. Yes,
mom's slam piece.
Gotcha.
It's just the guy who buys condoms for your mom, and. Uses them.
You know, I had apparently I had such bad ADHD / maybe autism, I've not been diagnosed, that I scared away so many potential boyfriends for my mom. Where like for the first like 6 years of my life, anytime we went out to a restaurant, I would have such sensory overload that I'd have a full on meltdown. And I scared away like 12 dudes that my mom was pretty seriously dating.
Wow.
And it's kind of fucked to talk about your mom like around. That.
Yeah, my stepdad stuck around. He was the first guy where I had a sensory overload. Then he took me out to the parking lot and gave me a spanking. And my mom was like, this guy might be able to handle this shit. I was escorted out of the Blockbuster by my current stepfather, and we had words in his Ford Ranger, is the way the story has been told to me.
Told to you?
Well, apparently when I would have these they were blackouts. Like, my brain would go completely blank, and I would flip the fuck out. Like, I apparently had these all the way until like first grade, to the point where I would black out and I would get so angry at whoever was trying to corral me that I would beat my head against the nearest solid object and I would scream and cry. But my kindergarten or first grade teacher, she was also a hard ass, and she kind of, well, she didn't beat it out of me, as far as I remember, but somehow, some way, she got me to calm down and stop. That is why, like, my mom was always scared to have me tested for autism because she didn't want to deal with it. So she was like, oh, if I never have him tested, then he can't ever have autism. I don't think I'm autistic. I think I'm just...
You have diet Asperger's, maybe.
Well, I don't know what Asperger's is, but it's a pretty funny name.
I am at a loss. I'm at a loss.
Hi, welcome to Stepdads
Anonymous. I feel like Usher. Like
last week was Stepdads and Dentists. Okay, this is a new week. It's a fresh week.
Dentistry is important. Dental health is important. You know, dental mishygiene killed more cavemen than any other disease. Like, tooth infections killed more cave people than anything else.
Okay, good to know you're on Big Crest's payroll.
It's a big tooth.
Big tooth. boy.
Cool. Well, this has been
fucking wild.
Wild.
It's been a real trip so far.
So I like to think that the show opens with a title card. I know some Masks games like to do the comic book thing, but when I think of this, I always think of the cartoon shows. And so I think of the title card showing up, and it says Gifted. And then the title card cracks, and this red R appears, and it like kind of separates the letters and turns Gifted into Grifted.
Oh my God, I love that so much.
We open more or less exactly where we left off. We are in the conference room inside of the cult headquarters, underneath the Pizza Hut / Taco Bell. The camera approaches Randall Neal slowly, head on. We match cut, revealing a much younger and roguishly handsome Randall in his prime, during the golden age of superheroes. He's wearing a domino mask and a very nice-looking three-piece suit. The hand that was holding the coffee cup is now holding a small-caliber pistol. He doesn't really need the firearm, but it can be very persuasive. His other arm is at his side, holding a duffel bag packed to the gills with $100 bills. We can now see clearly that he is inside of a New York City bank. The bank teller gapes as Randall vanishes from sight. Even though we can't see him, the camera follows him, bouncing as though tracked to his movements. Police cars pull to a stop in front of the bank, and armed police officers get out and shield themselves behind their front doors, pistols drawn. Randall pays them no mind and squeezes past them, careful not to give away his presence. He's through, undetected. And then he sees her, Miss Fantastic. Descending from above is what can only be described as an angelic being. A stunning woman dressed in all white, her cape billowing. He stops and looks up at her, and he's enraptured. Unfortunately for him, with her X-ray vision, she can see him too. We transition rapidly as a barred jail door slides closed from the side, and his outfit changes into the classic black and white striped prisoner's uniform of years past. But the look of awe never leaves his face, and we can see Miss Fantastic in the reflection of his eyes, looking at him from outside the jail cell. there's a rapid series of vignettes as he easily escapes prison and she catches him again and again. It's a different time. There's no Tartarus. The villainy has much lower stakes. A romance blooms between them that begins with a genuine shared smile. We see all of these little moments that become bigger and bigger, and they culminate in a huge wedding. All of the heroes from Brooklyn Shield are here, but Randall doesn't see any of them. He only has eyes for her. They kiss, and the flash of a camera freezes the scene. It fades to black and white as the camera pulls back from a newspaper. We see this photograph on the front page with the title, A Fantastic Wedding. We see the rapid passing of time as they build a life and home together. They are blissfully in love. Mrs. Fantastic develops a baby bump. We see her holding a small baby in her arms in a hospital bed. It's a boy. Randall takes him, and his face is so full of joy seeing what they've created. He says his son's name, Edmund. We cut forward to the fateful day. Edmund is 5 years old now, a young boy thriving in a time of prosperity, surrounded by a loving family. We see the same memory that Max saw when he touched Governor Edmund Neal's mind, except this time it's from the perspective of his father, Randall. We see again the cataclysmic eruption of a black hole in New York City that destroys the family that Randall built. The years pass by and we see Randall wither away, slaving away at a project. He builds an enormous corkboard of conspiracy theories, trying to solve the riddle that is the Sundering. The official story offers him no recourse. Hollow, dead, maybe millions gone. But he picks up breadcrumbs that suggest things do not add up. We see a young adult Edmund at the doorframe of this room. Edmund, despite having two powered parents, has developed none of his own. Edmund shakes his head and leaves Randall there. Randall needs resources to pull off his plan. He returns to crime as the grifter. He plans carefully, stealing money and amassing wealth, and builds an organization. We see these metaphorical dark threads expand from him as the camera pulls back and a dark web forms, representing the greater will. He begins to build a machine, testing it in an underground lab. With it, he burrows holes into the space between, but the tests are very volatile. The project is coming along very slowly, and he sets it aside. A pipe dream. Randall is watching a political debate in his office late at night. The only light is coming from the television, and it gives Randall a ghostly look. His phone rings, and he mutes the television just as his son, the gubernatorial candidate, begins to speak. We hear Aaron's voice on the other end.
Sir, someone else received it. He's just a kid. Wrong place, wrong time.
We see Randall watching laboratory footage documenting Max's condition. They test Max, and he's much weaker than they'd anticipated a new host would be. A hypothesis grows in Randall's mind. He begins testing anew on the machine. They start small with their new subject. Just a fraction of the power here and there. But it causes Max to be unstable, each time seeming to cause more frequent breaches. And again, they set the project aside. I hope that that illuminates who I am and what I'm about. I know that you have had some misgivings about what the greater will is after.
Very true. Oh, sorry, I know you mentioned this before. How old does the grifter look?
I'm 70-ish years old.
It's a long time to hold a grudge.
Indeed. I believe that my dear wife is still in there somewhere. And I aim to recover her, whatever it takes.
Do you think your wife's still alive in Hollow?
I do.
This is some Ant-Man. She's in the quantum realm.
All right, I'm going to say something, and you tell me if it strikes a nerve. He has his father's teeth and his mother's bite mark.
I don't know what that means.
All right, so that part, Apollo, not related to your wife. It's good to know. So, Mr. Grifter, what the fuck are you willing to do to help us? We're trying to recover Hollow for the sake of our friend Max.
Well, let me establish what I believe we've learned in testing.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that Max participating in the ritual opened a second connection to It the Devourers. And the two pulls from you and Hollow have diluted the power that you can pull from it.
Oh, that's why I'm so weak.
You have inadvertently also weakened Hollow.
Do you know the extent? Like, instead of leveling an entire city, is it like I level a city block now kind of thing, or...
Without getting our hands on Hollow to verify, I'm not certain. But I believe that should you meet again, you will be able to either transfer all of your power into him or vice versa.
How do I do that?
I speculate that it will be a tug of war of some kind.
So you're telling me I could just push all of my power and I go back to being normal?
I believe that that will work, yes.
What outcome are you looking for?
Well, once all of the power is consolidated under one individual, then we will use the device and open the way through them. I believe it is incredibly likely to kill that person.
To open the vice, open the portal to It that devours to do what?
To free the souls within.
Does this mean I didn't kill anybody? Like, I didn't, like, they're just, like, stuck inside some alternate world and we can get them out?
I believe it's possible.
Look at that! All those people I sucked. I could be in a room with everyone I ever sucked.
So to be clear, there's still blood on Harvey and mine's hands, but you're good now.
I'm actually still going to heaven. You guys though, straight to hell.
We're fucked.
I am not sure that anybody you do not fully consume would be there.
Oh. Mm.
The energy within you replenishes.
It's the fully consuming part, I don't know.
And if those souls aren't there?
The worst case scenario, at least within the confines of my plan, are that the current host of It that Devours will die, and no souls will return. But that means that there will be no active host.
Do you know how a host came into being in the first place? Is it kind of like the Lich King, there always must be one?
Only you specifically. Via the ritual.
So you think if we X both the hosts, then there won't be any more, like they won't come back somehow.
Or at least we can take steps to prevent it.
Also, me pushing all of my power into him, what will that do to me?
It should leave you powerless.
But alive?
I believe so. It's certainly possible. Probable, even.
Okay, I was going to say, I need more than possible to... Because, like, I want to be rid of these powers, but I also don't want to be dead.
Of course.
What do our next steps look like?
Well, I believe I need a debrief of what happened in Tartarus and afterwards to catch up. Aaron says you've been... you haven't exactly been forthcoming with details.
Yeah. I was, and still partially am, a little hesitant to reveal everything. You guys are culty, so I didn't know exactly where your priorities lie.
I don't trust Aaron. Not with a 10-foot fucking pole.
Why?
They're only interested in Hollow Man. They're not interested in you, my homie. My home dog. They're only interested in getting rid of this thing. They don't care if they fucking get rid of you.
I'll turn to the grifter. How do I know this isn't just one big grip to get rid of both me and Hollow? It's in the name, you know.
Well, I could have tried it on you as is and risked your life already, but I have not.
Because the opportunity didn't present itself?
We had all the opportunity. In fact, Aaron here was your greatest defender.
Aaron, really?
And Aaron looks at you and he says, it was supposed to be me, not you. And I wouldn't throw your life away for that.
You know, there's a lot of things that should have been us and not Aaron, if you really stop and think about it.
This is like one of those things where Aaron was really the good guy all along.
Turns out the true Aaron was the friend we made along the way. So then what do you need us to do right now?
I believe that you are my best shot at getting close to Hollow.
Well, I mean, I definitely am, so I guess you're not wrong.
The Vanguard, the Dark Stars, not a chance.
Why?
Because of my history, my age.
I see.
What sort of involvement do you have with them?
How do you mean?
Like, if we had a connection and asked them to assist, not that we would, because, you know, that could get us grounded, but if we had that opportunity, how would they respond to you? Hey, the grifter is looking for assistance in taking down Hollow once and for all.
I don't believe that they would be amenable to that.
If you were, like you say you are, if you were to help us and Governor Pisspants Neil was to oppose us, how are you going to feel about that?
My son and I have a complicated relationship, to say the least.
Yeah, a lot of parents have a lot of complicated relationships with their kids. But I'm asking you, would you defend your kid if it came to it? Or would you fight your kid if it comes down to it?
I would fight him.
That's good to hear. Because your boy Neil, your boy Governor Neil, stole my friend's power.
A wrong that I would right if I can. It's not been the focus of my research, but any aid that I can provide, I will.
It's okay. We've been working on it independently.
I am sorry that my son had such a negative effect on you. All of you.
Do you have a plan for an assault on this villainous operation? Is this the part where we brainstorm?
Yes, I'm sorry. Where is that?
San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, I have a tracker.
Our acquaintance,
Paul Friend, Moore, yeah, I'm their friend.
has placed a tracker inside their secret base in San Francisco, or the remnants of the city.
Point of order. Aaron, can you please read the text messages? Drew, can you just share a few text messages that you sent Aaron regarding Paul's status?
Paul betrayed these nuts. If I ever see him again, I'm going to fuck him up. It's fight on sight. Aaron was probably like, what happened? What's going on? And I just reiterate, betrayed these nuts. Hollow was in my grasp. Paul pissed all over that. Don't trust him. I would never trust him again. World's worst friend. Who needs friends with enemies like these? Hashtag.
It seems that you all have settled your differences, but I want you to know, Paul, that I see you, and I know what you are.
Well, can you share with the rest of the class what you mean by that?
Yeah.
You are a loose cannon. Craven. Untrustworthy. You will do whatever it takes for validation from anyone. We'll give it to you.
Okay, see, I thought you were going to go a way different direction with that. I thought you were going to be like, you're cool and you did a good thing for your friends. But, all right. Jesus Christ, that's fine.
Max has been a huge investment for me. It's my interest to know who he cavorts with.
I mean, you could have just said, I'll talk to you later. I didn't think you were going to just... It was going to be like that. I figured
you could have... I'm too old for that shit.
Okay.
Speaking the truth saves time.
Hey, you know what? Here, what do you think of Lily, real quick? Let's just say what you think of everyone in the room while we're here.
I didn't even mention the misogyny, but you brought it forward. Thank you.
Whoa, I love women, first of all. All right. Love babes. All right, so here's the thing. Don't accuse me of that.
it's so funny. Every time Austin offers anyone a shovel to dig you a hole.
Yeah, no, I just
we all take it. Including you.
Yeah. When you guys go low, I go lower, you know?
He's like, whoa, hold on, your tunnel is like 6 feet underground? I'm gonna beat that.
What a shitty tunnel.
We could go deeper. As much as right now, as much as it pains me to say, I feel like Paul has to know that if he really betrayed us, showing his face would be a non-option, because we would just break him.
Yeah, thank you. Obviously. That's what I've been trying to say.
So I feel his intel is worth considering.
Sure. We will take it into account. Certainly.
We would like to press the issue. And if it wouldn't be too much, we would ask that you all send us out to the West Coast to deal with this situation and finish it.
Sure.
Mr. Grifter, Neil, I'm just going to call you
please.
Randall, Mr. Randall.
I like to think that you guys like have the like some kind of like exported version of the tracking data.
I got it on a flash drive, of course.
And he pulls it up on a display here in the conference room, and he zooms in to see exactly where it's pointing.
Enhance.
Except it's like pinch zooming into Google Maps.
Yeah.
And you can see that the tracking information points into the San Francisco Bay.
A lot of sharks in those waters.
The grifter looks at this and he says, there must be an entrance somewhere in the city. We just need to find it.
Do you guys have, and you got, you three, or maybe just two, I forget who, will be proud of me on this, but do you guys have Zeta Tubes? I think that's the name of the technology, right? I watched like 5 episodes of Young Justice because we mentioned it one time.
There's Zeta Tubes and Boom Tubes, which Boom Tubes were used later. But yeah, I'm going to say no, but that's just because he has something else.
Beta Tubes.
A Greyhound bus.
Not even a ticket, though, just the bus.
We have Spirit Airlines.
It's a Winnebago.
Yeah, him and the
bus. Like, we get outside.
He's grandpa.
You imagine it's just Aaron with a rickshaw. Just like,
he's riding his babies for miles.
We have a boat.
I think he's like, please follow me. And he's going to walk out of the conference room.
I turn to look if everyone's following him or not.
I'm following Max's lead. Because this is Max's cult. Mm-hmm.
It's a cult of Max. As
I don't... Yeah, I don't... Alright. Semantics. I'll follow.
Yeah, and he leads you guys to another section of the complex. And you can tell as soon as he opens the door that it's to this cavernous space, the way the sound hits it. And he flips a big old switch, ka-chunk. And the lights come on, and you see that you're in some kind of underground hangar. And there is a sizable, sleek, kind of stealth-looking jet here.
How big's the hangar?
Oh god, you want me to measure it?
Well, I'm like thinking, you know, whenever you see like warehouses that have those huge lights and they throw on the switch and then you just hear it, or like ka-thunk, 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 yeah, as each light kind of comes on in,
well,
in parallel.
So what I was gonna say, yeah, no, that's true, and it does that because you can see that from the hangar itself, you see a long runway angling up. And you see the lights just keep on going and light up down the runway.
Oh, man. I can't wait to see what water fixture this comes out of. Like, if there's going to be, like, a waterfall or, like, a little pond or something. It's going to be so sick.
Yeah. But when I visualize this jet in my mind, it looks kind of like the Quinjets from Marvel, if you're familiar with those.
Not the Helicarrier?
Helicarrier is too big for what y'all are doing.
Good enough.
I mean, Helicarriers are sweet, but
we are we're
striking enormous. Yeah,
we don't require the full power of the helicarrier.
Yeah. So you guys all load up and board the jet, I presume.
Yeah.
Aaron hops in the pilot seat, and they do.
Aaron
all the
has a pilot's license.
Aaron is a man of many talents.
All my homies hate Aaron.
He's a true Agent Coulson.
More like an Agent May, but whatever.
I mean, there's some truth to that, I suppose. But anyway, Aaron goes through all of the pre-flight check, getting the jet ready to go, and it starts to power up. And then he's basically going to taxi the jet to turn it down the runway. So the jet takes off up and out, and it's going to come out of, you know, I hadn't really planned on doing a waterfall, but you kind of sold me on it, honestly.
Yeah.
It's funny because, like, I can't really even think of a waterfall in Georgia, but I'm not super knowledgeable about those.
The Tallulah Gorge has a few.
Where is that?
Northeast Georgia?
Probably too far away.
I mean, there's Amicalola Falls, but it's not a big waterfall for sure.
Yeah.
It's also very far north.
The Toccoa Falls, the Anna Ruby Falls. I've just looked up waterfalls in Georgia.
Yeah. So the problem I have is that none of those are anywhere near Atlanta, really. They're all out in rural Georgia.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Atlanta itself, not a big water.
How many of them are close to a Pizza Hut / Taco Bell?
Oh, man, we're really narrowing it down here. I'm sure at some point a superhero / villain battle happened that caused...
We've reshaped the terrain.
Yeah.
I have an idea. It was part of an eco-terror plot by Primeval to reshape, like, a river. I'm not sure which river offhand, but the idea Chattahoochee makes the most sense, was to destroy some infrastructure. And in the wake of that whole incident, it created a new waterfall.
All my homies and my girlfriend hate Primeval.
The jet flies through this waterfall and out into the sky, and it's heading west. It's going to take a couple of hours at least. I guess I have a question. Do you guys chat amongst yourselves? What do you guys do to pass the time? Kind of have a little breather here.
I feel like I'm probably nervously pacing if I can be up and moving. I don't know the space-wise of the Quinjet-sized vehicle. If there's room for me to pace, I will be, because this could be my answer. This could be it. And yeah, I'm both excited and terrified.
I believe there is certainly room for you to pace.
Oh, also I'm drawing up my my will, because the grifter was like, I'm pretty sure you won't die, and pretty sure means there's still a chance.
I'd never let you die, Max.
As long as you carry me in your heart, you know, I'll never die. The memory of Max will live on.
I'll kill you.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah.
I think what's going to happen is Aaron, like, puts on the autopilot, and Randall is going to sit in the co-pilot seat, just kind of man the station. I think Aaron just sees the state of distress that you're in, Max, and I think he's going to kind of take you aside.
We're going to go have words.
Yeah, he's like, just remember all the breathing exercises we've done before. I know that it seems trite, but truly, emotional regulation is so important. This is a very stressful time. Who knows what will happen to any of us?
Yeah, I want to say thank you, Aaron. And I feel like we don't say this enough, but yeah, thank you for everything you did. Both with the training and helping me get to this point, and then obviously, you know, you've stuck your neck out so many times for me and the boys that, you know, you don't get the credit that you deserve.
I really appreciate you saying that.
But if this is, you know, it for me, you know, I want you to know that none of it was your fault. And even though I said all that shit about Paul, I take some of it back. Not all of it, because it was still kind of fucked up, but I want you to do me a favor, and if anything happens, make sure he doesn't have any kind of, like, hard feelings or guilt over the situation.
I will do my best. When it comes to Paul, there are no promises, as you well know.
I'm gonna nudge Harvey. I'm sure to, you know, just pal around like we always have, just me and the boys just goofing around. And I'm gonna be like, so do you and Lily ever try to join the Mile High Club? I imagine you guys don't need a plane to do it.
You know, believe it or not, and I turned to Lily, who's sitting right next to me. in the few months we've been dating, it's not really come up,
You haven't come the entire time you've been dating?
I mean, we're like juniors in high school, man. You know, we're just kind of taking it at our own pace.
I'm pretty sure it's none of your fucking business anyway, Paul.
Lily, it's me. I'm talking to the boys right now, all right?
I'm right here.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
She's right here, dog.
We're inside, a jet.
I thought she was saying she's one of the boys. I was like, yeah. But I realized
she's one of the crew for sure. She's like one of the homies.
Part of the crew, part of the ship.
Technically, if I never voted, I can choose to not observe that. I mean, it's, I was involved in the vote. I feel like I don't have to.
The betrayal kind of kicked you out of the voting process. Sort of like being a felon, like your right to suffrage was taken away.
Nope, I'm not touching that. I am not touching that.
This week he abstains from talking about women voting.
But I mean, like, I mean, I mean, shit, Paul, you're talking about my sex life. How's your sex life going? You chatting up a lot of ladies?
Well, one of the things I left out is when I was over in the other.
Oh, I'm sure.
The other layer.
You got a villainous girlfriend in San Francisco that we've never met.
Hours.
Yeah.
Hours.
Where he's going, he doesn't need hours.
Oh, it did not take hours.
Fair enough.
Yeah, she had this big long braid. She's really hot. All right. You'll see her. You'll see her when we go there. All right.
Why does she sound so like Lara Croft? Why does she sound so much like the Tomb Raider?
I mean, she had smaller boobs, but
oh,
does she have a name?
You know, we didn't do it by names. You know, we were just it was all passion.
Look, Paul. You know, I really do hope that what you're saying's true, that you never turned your back on us. It's just I really hope to meet what's her name someday so that she can tell us her side. Like, I have such a, you know, being your homie, it seems so difficult to picture a woman digging all this.
Wow.
You just gestured at all of him.
Well, Lily, you know, sometimes honesty is the best medicine.
Can I get a physical description of Paul one more time? Just a little brain refresher.
I'm going to go see if there's snacks on the snack cart. And I'm going to fucking...
It's a nasty.
Was there a snack cart? Is there a snacky zone?
This is not like a private jet with like.
It's a military plane.
Yeah, it's more like a military style, with the long rows on each side.
Oh, so they only have their MREs.
Yeah, that's more likely than a snack cart.
I'm gonna start eating an MRE.
And I think after a while, Aaron and Randall will trade places. And I think Randall just kind of sits by himself, and he just like he looks focused. He's got his like game face on, and he's got this this long duffel bag that he's brought along with him. I think Max would at least like I think maybe see that it's kind of familiar. Because you remember the device that he described, and it is kind of vaguely gun-like, but also you know that it is not something you use at range. It's more like a almost like a jackhammer type of deal. If that makes sense.
Question for the boys: did you guys feel like the grifter was kind of mentally and emotionally stable when it came to the feeling of his wife maybe not actually being stuck in the other space.
Sorry to be clear, are you asking Paul or me?
You guys, like you, Alex.
Oh.
Because I was getting the feeling that he was like kind of dead set on that, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't just like off in it, because that'll change how I respond to him.
I'll be honest. Any mention of cult or cult-like behavior, I do not trust that person. Because I personally, Colin McElroy, I don't trust, this is going to say more about me than other people. I don't trust the behavior of quote-unquote true believers. Because I am not a true believer. So the idea that you could have complete faith in something, complete faith that something will work, is a bit disconcerting for me. Like, there are things I believe in, but I don't know that I believe in anything fully enough to warrant, like, unyielding faith. Like, I have just enough doubt, and I think about everything to, like, even if someone agrees with me, if they're like, oh, no, this thing 100% will work, I think I'd still be a little bit of a devil's advocate and be like, I mean, I agree with you, but I don't know that that's going to work exactly the way you think it is.
You know, I don't know. I feel like this old man clearly has a good grip on the occult, and I'm going to trust him.
That is a very Alex answer.
Thank you.
To be fair, if this was a different campaign or game, like, this would be the perfect starting for a Call of the Cthulhu campaign of, like, a, you gotta trust me, my wife, she was murdered by this Eldritch Horror, but if you guys get on this plane with me and go to this this island, we can get her back.
How does that story end, do you think?
Usually with all this dying.
In heartbreak and horror.
Yeah, it would be like, I don't know when, but some point he would see his wife and like go running to her, and then this would be like the lure that you see on those deep sea anglerfish that the cosmic horror is dangling in front of him.
Okay, follow up question. How many times is that guy wrong?
100.
100
out of 100 times.
I mean, define wrong. Wrong in what sense?
Yeah, like he's right that his wife is somewhere in this cosmic being, but he's wrong in the sense of there's no fucking way you're getting her back. You're just going to go feed the beast. So, I mean.
So, if we want to talk narratively, I still doubt Mr. Randall, because it's the classic, you know, tragic dedication story where he dedicates himself wholly to an idea that is based on a false premise. If we want to talk narratively, I think most likely his story is, his premise is based on a false idea that we will then have to combat once he confronts it and realizes the folly of his direction. No? Yes?
I feel like I can't respond to that. So we can kind of pick up where you left off. You were trying to follow some crumb trails and tease some stuff out of me here.
Yes.
It sounds like you were heading in a specific direction. What are you trying to do here?
Well, I was gonna. It all started with I was going to go talk to the grifter, and just try to gently prod, like, oh, what if this doesn't go the way either of us like? Like, what if I don't get rid of that powers? What if your wife's not there? That kind of thing. but I wanted to gauge the other people's like head spaces to see if, do you think if I did that, he would just like start having a freak out on the plane kind of level, or if he'd be like, oh, well, I've thought of that contingency also. I'm perfectly stable if my wife is actually dead. Or somewhere in between. I'm almost positive it would be somewhere in between, but you know. Which side are we leaning toward? And I didn't really get anything. I got Colin saying he doesn't trust anything cults ever say because he's part of a cult. And then Alex said, I'll play the devil's advocate. I'll be like, you know, he's an old man with some sort of cosmic horror thing. So I believe him. So here I am. I'm going in. I sit down in the seat next to him. Crazy night, huh?
You flirting with him?
It depends on how he
crazy party it. We're at. You could say that.
So like I, you know, this is obviously a long time coming for me, like something I've wished, but obviously for you it's been much much longer.
Decades.
Yeah. What happens if we're wrong here?
I'm not wrong.
Okay.
Man, it's like question. Talking to me. Jesus.
But how do you know?
I've been studying this for the better part of 50 years.
I really want him to just have like a Ouija board and be like, honey, if you're there... Are you
is Miss Fantastic in the room with you right now?
Yeah, yeah. Are you just stuck on the other side and he's like moving it like see guys, I'm not crazy. Why haven't you told anyone else about this possibility, like any of the other supers?
I have.
What'd they say?
They treat me like I'm some kind of crackpot conspiracy theorist. I believe that was Hades' hand at work.
Oh.
Trying to hide the existence of all.
Oh. Why was the cult trying to get another one of me, us, whatever we are?
This same plan was in place to open a way to the space between. We needed a vessel.
Okay. And I'm trying to make sure I understand the timeline. So you wanted to get a second vessel so that way you could get to the place between. But then once you got me, you realized, oh, only the vessel at full strength would allow us to travel to the other side? Is that right?
The possibility would be that we open the, for lack of a better term, reservoir, but only a fraction of it.
And that would not be enough to get someone out.
Someone specific? No.
I see. And you can only do this once? Because the process will kill the individual.
That's correct. And Aaron knew that going into it. He is a true believer. One of my best.
Some people call them lemmings, but I... Okay. In this hypothetical world that for some reason something goes wrong and instead of me pushing all of my power into Hollow, he pushes all his power into me. It's now going to be like a showdown, a face-off, me versus you, because obviously instead of trying to figure out a way to get my power into someone else, we're going to immediately say, no, I've got the gun thing here that can get us in and you're going to pull the trigger on me. Is any of that correct?
Why would you absorb all of the power?
I'm just saying if something goes wrong. I've seen enough TVTropes.org pages to know how these things go. That something is going to go wrong with the plan, so I went for the most obvious one.
Well, you have seen Hollow face to face.
Yes.
My understanding is that he was not coherent.
There was only like one brief moment, but yeah.
My question to you is that an existence that you would want?
No, but I already have an existence that I don't really want. And I've already stated I still would rather it than death. So I would love for us to then be like, okay, how can we get some of that power out of Max and put it into someone else? Let's say Aaron or you or, you know, anyone.
Well, as you well know, it is difficult for you to push power into others. You mostly take, hence the moniker Siphon, correct?
Correct, correct.
I believe that this relationship only exists with other hosts.
I am covertly texting to the side where he's not. So like if he's on my right side, I'm on my left side. And I'm like, yeah, guys, definitely keep eye out. They're 100% going to betray Adiz, the nuts. Winky face. Send.
I would not kill you lightly. But what other option would I have? We've come so far. There may never be another opportunity.
This is a lot of like the sunk cost fallacy, where you've come so far that you're like, you know what? What is one more horrible thing? And what I'm trying to tell you is, would your wife want that? Would she want you to commit all of these horrible acts?
Pull the wife card.
She certainly wouldn't. She always saw the best in me.
Exactly. So you be the best you can be.
I will try.
All right. This conversation took a turn that I did not think would happen when I sat down, but I'm glad it did. So I'm just gonna give him a good old pat on the knee there. Like, thanks, Gramps. This is a good one.
And I think he like takes you, like grabs you like by like, I don't know, like the sleeve, basically. And he looks at you. He's got that old man grip strength, you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. He looks you in the eyes and he says, just don't lose.
I'm going to kind of wrestle my hand or his hand off my sleeve, and when I do, I brush against his hand. I give him the image of Governor Neil Pace himself.
Fuck, baby.
You know, I've seen him piss himself when he was a boy.
Yeah, but it's funnier as a man. and I walk away. That's my pocket sand always, is just to give someone the piss image.
Piss.jpg.
Yeah. Rusty Shackford. Okay, I get out of there and go find the boys.
Calls out from the cockpit. He says, I've got a visual, and you can see through the viewport what was formerly the city of San Francisco. You see a large blast crater at the very center of it, and it looks like there are parts of the city where the buildings are still intact.
The remnants of it?
You can see that in the 80 years since the bomb went off, remnants of the city are overgrown. Some of the buildings you can't even see under all the growth.
Was there a reason why people didn't return? Like, so like, I get why people don't return to a place of an atomic blast, right? There's fallout, issues with radioaction, and stuff like that. Is that the case here, or were people just like, it's too fucking sad to go back?
I think that Randall can see the question on your mind, and he says, it's been 80 years. The government has kept the site closed for decades, even though it should be theoretically livable by now. Stormwatch still keeps a militarized perimeter here. Hopefully, with this craft's stealth capabilities, we can slip in undetected. We really don't want to cross paths with them if we can help it. From up here, you can also see the Golden Gate Bridge. It's rusted and darkened over the years and massively overgrown. My mind's eye is like, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this game, but it's one I played a long time ago, Enslaved.
Ooh, such a good game. So underrated.
I think of the big bridge climbing sequence with all of the moving pieces and you have to get the girl across. That kind of aesthetic is what I visualize here, just all of the vehicles piled up and rusted over. Aaron finds an open, relatively flat spot in the city and brings the jet down. You guys, along with Aaron and Randall, gather all your things and disembark into San Francisco. I think you guys are struck first by just how quiet it is. You guys are so used to the wall of noise that is Sanctuary. From here, you can still easily hear the ocean. And the city is teeming with life. You hear birds chirping. Some small animal you can't see darts through the brush nearby. It has this kind of serene quality to it, even though on its face, this place is kind of haunting, you know? Like, thousands upon thousands of people died here. You all are hiking along, taking in all the sights, sounds, and smells, keeping an eye out for something that could function as the base entrance. Aaron, I think, is leading the way. He seems to be kind of in his element here, surrounded by nature, and he stops short. He hears something, or maybe it's an intuition. He dives to the side, narrowly avoiding this blurry figure that zips right through the air where he was just standing. The figure skids to a stop through the brush, and you get a look at her.
Oh no, I know what you're doing. Wait a second. I feel like I know what you're doing. Go ahead.
You see a feminine figure. She's wearing this mottled green body armor.
You son of a bitch.
It looks kind of like a Power Rangers suit. She's got the kind of snake fangs on either side framing the visor. And she's kind of in this crouching position, ready to spring in any direction.
Question, can you see the hair of the woman at all?
Yeah. Coming out of the back of her helmet is a long black braid.
Laura Croft?
The wall of a nearby building bursts open, spraying brick into the street where you guys are walking, and a large figure steps out. He looks kind of like the quintessential D&D druid. He's kind of dirty. He's wearing these raggedy, vagabondy robes, and he's got a crown made of some twine or something, and it's got a pair of antlers. The most notable thing about him right now, however, is like the humanoid-shaped power armor that he's formed around himself, kind of like Renin 6, where he's wrapped himself in an int of sorts. The exterior is mostly bark, and it makes him a much more imposing figure. And Harvey recognizes this person.
Is this prime fucking evil?
Yeah, it is.
I'm about to kill this man.
Why?
Sorry, Lily's about to kill this man with my help.
And he extends his arms out to the side, and the tree arms do too. He sees Harvey and Lily, and he cracks a big grin. How was your flight? I hope you're feeling up for a rematch.
Oof, this guy's fucking rad.